Chapter 22. One Answer. Pevara waited with a touch of impatience while the slim little accepted placed the rimmed silver tray on a side table and uncovered the dish of cakes. A short woman with a serious face, Pedro was not being laggard or resentful over having to spend the morning fetching and carrying for a sitter, just precise and careful. Those were useful qualities, to be encouraged. Still, when the accepted asked whether she should pour the wine, Pevara said crisply, "We will do for ourselves, child. You may wait in the anteroom." She almost told the young woman to go back to her studies. Pedra spread her banded white skirts in a graceful curtsy without any sign of being flustered, the way accepted often were when a sitter showed snappishness. All too frequently, accepted took any bite in a sitter's tone as an opinion on their fitness for the shawl, as if sitters had no other concerns. Pevara waited until the door closed behind Pedra and the latch clicked before nodding approvingly. "That one will be raised, Aes Sedai, soon," she said. It was satisfying when any woman attained the shawl, but especially when the woman had appeared unpromising to begin with. Small pleasures seemed the only ones available these days.
"Not one of ours, though, I think," was the reply from her surprising guest, who turned from a study of the row of painted miniatures of Pevara's dead family that stood in a line on the wave-carved marble mantel above the fireplace. "She's uncertain about men. I believe they make her nervous."
Tarna certainly had never been nervous about men or very much of anything else, at least not since she reached the shawl just over 20 years ago. Pevara could remember a very jumpy novice, but the pale-haired woman's blue eyes were steady as stones now, and about as warm as stones in winter. Even so, there was something in that cool, prideful face, something in the set of her mouth that made her seem uneasy this morning. Pevara could hardly imagine what might make Tarna Fair nervous. The real question, though, was why the woman had come to see her. It bordered on impropriety for her to visit any sitter privately, particularly a red. Tarna still maintained her rooms here in the Red Quarter, but so long as she held her new position, she was no longer part of the Red Aja, despite the crimson embroidery on her dark gray dress. Delaying the move to her new apartment might be taken as a show of delicacy by those who did not know her. Anything out of the ordinary made Pevara wary, since Siane had pulled her into hunting the Black Aja. And Elida trusted Tarna just as she had trusted Galena. It was wise to be very cautious with anyone Elida trusted. Just thinking of Galena, the light burned the woman forever, still set Pevara's teeth on edge. But there was a second connection. Galena had taken a special interest in Tarna as a novice, too. True, Galena had taken an interest in any novice or accepted she thought might join the Red, but it was another reason for caution. Not that Pevara let anything show on her face, of course. She had been Aes Sedai too long for that. Smiling, she reached for the long-necked silver pitcher that sat on the tray, giving off the sweet scent of spices. "Will you take wine, Tarna, in congratulation for being raised?" Silver goblets in hand, they settled on spiral-worked armchairs, a style that had gone out of fashion in Kandor near 100 years ago, but one that Pevara liked. She saw no reason to change her furniture or anything else according to the whims of the moment. The chairs had served her since they were new made, and they were comfortable with the addition of a few cushions. Tarna sat stiffly, however, on the edge of her seat. No one had ever called her languid, but clearly she was uneasy.
"I am not certain congratulations are in order," she said, fingering the narrow red stole draped around her neck. The exact shade was not prescribed, except that anyone who saw it must call the color red, and she had chosen a brilliant scarlet that nearly shone. Elida insisted, and I could not refuse. "Much has changed since I left the tower, inside as well as out. Alviarin made everyone watchful of the keeper. I suspect some will want her birched when she finally returns. And Elida..."
She paused to sip at her wine, but when she lowered the goblet, she went on in a different vein. "I have often heard you called unconventional.
I have even heard that you once said you would like to have a warder."
"I've been called worse than unconventional," Pavara said dryly.
What had the woman been about to say concerning Elida?
She sounded as though she would have refused the keeper's stole, given her wishes. Strange. Tarna was hardly shy or shrinking.
Silence seemed best,
especially about warders. She had been talking too much, if that was general gossip. Besides, keep silent long enough, and the other woman always spoke, if only to fill up the gap. You could learn a great deal through silence. She sipped her own wine slowly. There was too much honey in it for her taste, and not enough ginger. Still stiff, Tarna rose and strode to the fireplace, where she stood staring at the miniatures sitting on their white lacquered stands. She raised a hand to touch one of the ivory ovals, and Pavara felt her own shoulders tighten in spite of herself. Georg, her youngest brother, had been only 12 when he died, when all of the people in those paintings died, in an uprising by Dark Friends. They had not been a family who could afford ivory miniatures, but once she had the coin, she found a painter who could capture her memories. A beautiful boy, Georg, tall for his years and utterly fearless. Long after the event, she had learned how her baby brother died, with a knife in his hand, standing over their father's body and trying to keep the mob from their mother. So many years ago now. They would all have been long dead in any case, and their children's children's children as well. But some hatreds never died. "The dragon reborn is Tavirin, so I have heard," Tarna said finally, still staring at Georg's picture. "Do you think he alters chance everywhere? Or do we change the future by ourselves, one step following another until we find ourselves somewhere we never expected?"
"What do you mean?"
Pavara said, a trifle more curtly than she could have wished. She did not like the other woman peering at her brother's image so intently while talking of a man who could channel, even if he was the dragon reborn. She bit her lip so as not to tell Tarna to turn around and look at her. You could not read someone's back the way you could a face.
"I anticipated no great difficulty in Salidar. No great success either, but what I found..."
Was that a shake of her head, or had she merely changed the angle at which she was peering at the miniature? She spoke slowly, but with an undercurrent of remembered urgency. "I left a pigeon handler a day outside the village, yet it took me less than half a day to get back to her, and after I loosed the birds with copies of my report, I pressed on so hard I had to pay the woman off because she could not keep up. I can hardly say how many horses I went through. Sometimes the animal was spent to the point I had to show my ring to make a stable take it in trade, even with silver added. And because I pressed so hard, I happened to reach a village in Murundi while a recruiting party was there. If I had not been frightened out of my wits for the tower by what I saw in Salidar, I would have ridden to Ebudar and taken ship for Ilion and then upriver. But the thought of going south instead of north, the thought of waiting for a vessel, sent me like an arrow toward Tarvalen. So I was in that village to see them."
"Who, Tarna?"
"Ashaman."
The woman did turn then. Her eyes were still blue ice, but tight. She held her goblet in both hands as if trying to soak in the warmth. "I did not know what they were then, of course, but they were openly recruiting men to follow the dragon reborn, and it seemed wisest to listen before I spoke. Well for me that I did. There were 6 of them, Pavara. 6 men in black coats. 2 with silver swords on their collars were feeling men out about whether they might like to learn to channel. Oh, they did not say so right out. Wield the lightnings, they called it. Wield the lightnings and ride the thunder. But it was clear enough to me, if not to the fools they were talking to."
"Yes. Very well for you that you kept silent," Pavara said quietly.
6 men who can channel would be more than merely dangerous for a sister by herself. Our eyes and ears are full of talk about these recruiting parties. They appear everywhere from Saldea to Tyr, but no one seems to have an idea of how to stop them, if it isn't too late already."
She very nearly bit her lip again. That was the trouble with talking. Sometimes you said more than you wanted. Oddly, the comment took some of the stiffness out of Tarna. She resumed her seat, leaning back, though a hint of wariness still clung to the way she held herself. She chose her words carefully, pausing to touch the wine to her lips, but she did not actually drink, that Pavara saw. I had a long time to think on the river ship coming north. Longer after the fool captain ran us aground so hard he broke a mast and put a hole in the hull. Days trying to hail another ship after we got ashore, and days finding a horse. 6 of those men sent to one village convinced me, finally. Oh, the district around as well, but it was not very populous. I believe it is too late. Elida thinks they can all be gentled, Pavara said noncommittally. She had already exposed herself too much. When they can send 6 to one small village? And travel? There is only one answer I can see. Tarna took a deep breath, fingering the bright red stole again, but now it seemed more in regret than to play for time. Red sisters must take them as warders, Pavara. That was so startling that Pavara blinked. A hair less self-control and she would have gaped. Are you serious? Those icy blue eyes met her gaze steadily. The worst was past, the unthinkable spoken aloud, and Tarna was a woman of stone once more. This is hardly a matter for joking. The only other choice is to let them run loose. Who else can do it? Red sisters are used to facing men like this and ready to take the necessary risks. Anyone else will flinch. Each sister will have to take more than one, but Greens appear to manage well enough with that. I think the Greens will faint if this is suggested to them, though. We, Red Sisters, must do what needs to be done. Have you broached this to Elida? Pavara asked, and Tarna shook her head impatiently. Elida believes as you said. The yellow-haired woman frowned into her wine before going on. Elida often believes what she wants to believe, and sees what she wants to see. I tried to bring up the Ashaman the first day I was back. Not to suggest bonding, not to her, I am not a fool. She forbade me to mention them to her. But you are unconventional. And do you believe they can be gentled after they're bonded? I have no idea what that would do to the sister holding the bond, and in truth, I don't want to learn. She was the one playing for time, Pavara realized. She had had no idea where this interview was headed when it began, but she would have wagered everything she owned against it coming to this. That might be the end, and it might prove impossible, the other woman replied coolly. The woman was stone. Either way, I can see no other way to handle these Ashaman. Red sisters must bond them as warders. If there is any way, I will be among the first, but it must be done. She sat there, calmly sipping her wine, and for a long time Pavara could only stare at her in consternation. Nothing Tarna had said proved she was not Black Adra, yet she could not distrust every sister unable to prove that. Well, she could, and did, when it came to matters of the Black, but there were other matters she had to deal with. She was a sitter, not simply a hunting dog. She had the White Tower to think of, and Aes Sedai far from the Tower. And the future. Dipping her fingers into her embroidered belt pouch, she drew out a small piece of paper rolled into a thin tube. It seemed to her that it should glow with letters of fire. So far, she was one of 2 women in the tower who knew what was written there. Even once she had it out, she hesitated before handing it to Tarna. This came from one of our agents in Kyrian, but it was sent by Tovain Ghazal. Tarna's eyes jerked Bavara's face at the mention of Tovain's name, then fell to reading again. Her stony face did not change even after she finished and let the paper roll back into a tube in her hand. "This changes nothing," she said flatly, coldly. "It only makes what I suggest more urgent." "On the contrary," Pavara sighed, "that changes everything. It changes the whole world."